Welcome to Between Two Rounds, where each episode we connect with innovators shaping the future. From exploring groundbreaking industries to visionary ideas, we're discussing what's next for our world with brilliant minds from all over the globe and hopefully in the future, more globes. I'm your host, Tariq Wakid, founding partner at Type One Ventures. You're watching Between Two Rounds. Our guest is Jason Dunn from Outpost. Thank you for being here today.
It's a pleasure.
We knew about you when we were at Made in Space. Our first investment at Type One was Made in Space. Mm-hmm. What inspired you to get involved in the space industry?
I think by all measures, I should have been a marine biologist. I grew up on the Gulf Coast of Florida.
Yeah.
Spent more time on my boat than like on land. Just fell in love with the natural world of the ocean. December 19th, 1999, there was a space shuttle launch at night. I stayed up a little bit later than I should have, went in my front yard, and I saw this little star go up into the sky. I just spent my day on the boat. It wasn't lost on me that there's astronauts on that little star.
Right.
You know, it was kind of like they're on their little boat leaving the ocean or leaving the shore of Earth into the ocean of space. I was having this fun idea that they're doing the same thing I'm doing.
Sure.
And made this connection that space is very much a part of Earth and that maybe we can solve.
Yeah. When does space end? When does Earth?
Yep. Begin. So, and there I am as like a young kid wanting to devote my life to like, you know, sustainability and preserving Earth and realize that maybe the answer to saving the planet exists beyond the planet, right? Hmm. So in that moment, at I think a much younger age than most people, got hooked on space.
Most people get hooked on phonics.
Right. Yeah. I think I did too.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. Like it's super inspiring to see what you did at Made in Space and now what you're doing at Outpost.
Right.
Also a Florida guy.
Really?
Florida. Yeah. I grew up in Florida.
Where?
I went to school in Tampa and then I went to college at Florida State.
Okay. So I grew up in Tarpon Springs.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
I went to, you guys were Pinellas County.
I was technically Pasco, but it's easier to, I like the branding of Pinellas.
It's the Tarpon Springs kind of gets like, country vibes.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I think you get a good sense of my childhood. Followed that space bug ever since then. I went to school in Central Florida so I could work on the space shuttle.
UCF?
Yep. Worked on the space shuttle in college. They retired the space shuttle while I was working on it. I had no idea that was even a thing.
What were you doing on the space shuttle?
Propulsion.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, it was crazy. I was an intern, so I got to spend my days like inside the propulsion bay of the space shuttle and looking at all these pipes and things and trying to figure out how it all worked. And then they retired it. And I thought that was it. Like, this is my career. Like, finish this internship, get the job, build, you know, space shuttle engines and stuff. When I saw it get retired, I was pretty upset. And then I, at that same time, read this book called The High Frontier.
Oh, I have that book, yeah. Hudson at Gravitix makes, and Colin Dawn at Gravitix, they make every new hire read The High Frontier.
So Gary was, I think, he was part of the Space Frontier Foundation.
Yes.
They were giving this book away.
Yeah.
And so like every college kid at these conferences would get it. So I got it. It was like the Bible, like, here, take this. I read the book at the same summer that they retired the space shuttle. And chapter one of that book is basically the space shuttle is going to exist and therefore, you know, we're going to have space colonies and people living on Mars and space-based solar power and all this stuff. And I loved the book and I was really upset that like the space shuttle ended because mm-hmm. all the cool stuff hadn't happened yet.
Right.
But really what the book was saying was low-cost launch would open up the frontier of space.
And we're seeing that today.
Yeah. So we're seeing that today. And
you started your first company before that was the reality. Made in Space was started, in 2000?
Yeah, so I mean, the High Frontier uses the words made in space a lot. Like that kind of framing is all throughout the book. So I looked at it and said, okay, SpaceX exists. If they do what they're saying they're going to do, we're going to have the low-cost launch. How do you build on top of that?
Correct.
So Made in Space was let's build the manufacturing, in-space manufacturing on top of that. I think we might have been a little bit too ahead of our time, but...
Well, they say that timing is everything.
Yep.
And you shouldn't try to time an investment or starting a company. You should just try to execute the next step.
Yep.
And you did that at Made in Space. I think when we saw you guys, you had like $30 million in government contracts or something like that.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And that was in 2019 when we invested in one of the secondary rounds you guys put out. What's Outpost working on now? Like, what's your next?
Outpost is really picking up in a lot of ways where Made in Space left off because we had, with Made in Space, we put the first 3D printer on the space station.
I remember that.
Then we put a machine up that made optical fiber in space. And we always thought the hardest problem would be making, you know, a 3D printer work in zero gravity. And it was, you know, definitely a technically hard problem. It turned out the hardest problem was getting anything back. These mm-hmm. were like the first parts that were made off Earth. We wanted to analyze them. It was hard to get them back. And so I realized Earth return was still like completely not focused on. We've you know, sent far more things into space than we've ever brought back.
100%.
And if you, I'm a
just the try getting the trash off the ISS right. is a pain in
yeah.
the
most butt. Of these shooting stars are just dirty underwear and toilet paper.
Nice.
Yeah.
If a shooting star with dirty underwear lands in your backyard, is that good luck?
You'd sell it on eBay.
That would be interesting. Yeah. You where it lands. Because Outpost can drop things into, can drop it in anywhere.
Did you see, I think it was North Korea started putting weather balloons full of like trash over the border into South Korea? That's it's in the news.
Really funny.
Yeah.
We should send DVDs with like information into North Korea
yeah, and like just Wikipedia.
Like Wikipedia. Yeah. Like here's the information. But make up a whole story so people think like there's like a, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I was amazed at that problem because business I built has always been on, I look forward into the future and I kind of like ask myself, what is something I know I can bet on that will happen? Like mm-hmm. if I can, like, I feel so confident that will happen, I'll just build a business around it.
Right.
I'm very confident that we will manufacture things in space one day that we, instead of launching them. And that was Made in Space.
So tell us like why do we manufacture things in space? Why is that a thing?
Yeah. So, you know, with Made in Space, it was, let's build things that you need to have in space that you don't necessarily need to launch.
Like a part in the ISS.
Yeah. Or you want to build, you know, a big solar array. You know, today we build solar arrays that have to survive launch. But if you built them in space, they're going to be more kind of delicate, but they're perfect for zero gravity. The thing that we figured out at Made in Space at the very end, right before it was acquired, was that there's this whole other element of things that you want to have on Earth, but you can only make them in space.
Like what?
Right? So what we've seen a lot of focus on so far are things that are really small, but worth a lot of money. So pharmaceuticals comes up a lot, new types of crystals or semiconductors. Where you can make a little bit of it, bring it back on a small capsule and make a great business out of it.
But why is it important to make it in space? Why can't you just make it on Earth?
Well, I'll touch on the area that I find more interesting, which is where Outpost has been focused, which is not the small stuff. It's the big stuff. It's something that if you could make tons of it in space and bring it back, there's a market.
You know what they say, the bigger the better.
Definitely in this scenario, because what we found was that there's a whole class of materials that you can't produce on Earth because of gravity. You have to make them.
So it's the gravity that's the unlocking.
Yep. Yeah. Turning off gravity. It, you know, like if you look at a lot of the physics equations and materials, there's always G equals 9.81 gravity.
Not looked at any of those equations. And I invest in space.
You might want to. Yeah. I'll show you some.
So you have the smart guys.
You make G equals zero and everything changes. And what we found this with at Made in Space was if you make fiber optic cables in zero gravity, this is, you know, the backbone of the internet. It's how data centers are wired up. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you make them in space, it's a glass. The crystal forms pure in zero gravity. And light goes through it much more efficiently.
Yeah, the way I like to, so we invested in Space Forge, which is making semiconductors.
Yep.
The way I like to describe it is if you mix water and oil, I like to bring things down to like something I could understand, layman could understand. And so it's oil and water, the heavier fluid goes to the bottom, the lighter one goes to the top. And when you do that with metals and alloys, the heavier metal goes to the bottom and the lighter goes to the top when you do it on Earth.
Yep.
And in that, in the middle, there's a small alloy that still has some impurities, but in space, you don't have that problem.
That's
right. You can create a perfect alloy.
Yeah. It's like the Italian salad dressing of space.
Yes. Yeah. I've been cutting down on that because I've been on a diet, but maybe I can get more salad dressing in space.
Nope.
No,
same. It's the same.
Same. Yep. So diet still the same.
I think so.
Okay, good. And so how big is your team now?
We're about 20 people. We're in the next month putting on a bunch of hires. So we're like, nice. We're about to scale.
Yeah. I'm excited for that.
The one I'm most excited about is commercially, we're very focused on building a very big Earth return vehicle. So we've shown this now publicly. We call it Carry All. It carries multiple tons back from space. And the video we showed actually has a shipping container as the payload.
Wow.
It's interesting because it unlocks the space manufacturing, the mm-hmm. things that Made in Space realized had a huge amount of value. But it also unlocks something else that the military today is really interested, which is point-to-point logistics. If you can launch on a rocket a shipping container, move it halfway around the Earth, and bring it back in and land it.
Yeah.
Now you did point-to-point delivery in, you know, maybe 60 minutes.
Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden we can get things into the South Pacific quicker than China can.
You also unlock weapons. Have you heard of Rods of God?
I have.
We should pull up Rods of God here. You take these tungsten metal tubes and you hover them around Earth's orbit, and then you can drop those, and the kinetic energy of those would just like destroy a city.
There's a lot of people who are fascinated by Rods of God. I've found out when we put out our videos there. There's a good subset of like on the social media of people who are like, okay, Rods of God.
It's insane.
I think it's scary. I gotta be honest, like we're at Outpost, we're way more interested in using our technology to save lives. I think, you know, if I look at, this is what got us into this direction is, I think that the most likely place that America will have to fight its next war is the South Pacific. It's just kind of the writing's on the wall.
I'm going to the South Pacific next month.
Yeah.
Not where? For the war.
Where?
The Cook Islands.
Okay.
Swimming with humpback whales.
That sounds better. I shouldn't say South Pacific as much as like the Taiwan Strait and things like that. So we use a lot of the South Pacific today to stage cargo to get it into these places. So we're going to have to fight a war in this place, and it puts America at a pretty interesting disadvantage from location. Like the adversary is China. They're right there, and we're across the Pacific Ocean. What do we want to do is make sure our military personnel, our lives are safe, right? So if you can get things in, cargo, supplies, emergency equipment into those places quickly through space, you can save lives.
Yeah, the supply chain, like the reason England lost the Revolutionary War was because their supply lines from England to the East Coast took a lot longer.
They needed some carry-alls.
They need some carry-alls. I want a carry-all for my next flight. But
for you or for like your luggage?
For my luggage, you know, that'd be nice.
You can bring a lot.
Carry all. You don't have to like check your bags.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea. We could like create some like carry all bags and just sell them on the
They have to be approved though for carry on.
Nice.
Then it would be
carry on carry alls.
Yes. You suck the air out, get you more things in there.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, good idea. But it's super interesting. And has the US government been interested in that sort of solution?
So what we're really excited about is there's a lot of support there. So we're about to announce a $33.2 million award through Air Force called StratFi.
Nice.
Where we have a variety of customers in the government putting the money in to develop this technology to get point-to-point logistics through space to be a real thing.
Nice. How important do you think the government is for the future of the space economy? Or do you think there will be a decoupling? Do you think the commercial space industry at a certain point, maybe 5-10 years from now, won't be as driven by government and nation states? I think it'll be much more commercially focused in the coming years. I don't know what timeline that would be.
Yeah.
But I do think commercial space will have a bigger impact than government-funded space.
Yeah. I mean, definitely when I look at the growth trajectory for our business, the commercial side is vastly bigger. What I feel like we've built with our military dual use applications is a way to just keep the ebbs and flows of revenue and projections a little bit more even, because we build this foundation through programs of record. That revenue, while it's hard to win, once it's won, it's pretty consistent. So we're still in that transition period where I think you're saying we're going to get to this point with the commercial. But if you look at every every big aerospace company today that's has a big market cap, there's some foundation on the government contract side, whether it's, you know, SpaceX getting resupplied to the space station or, you know, more traditional DoD contracts.
So right.
ALPA's been very focused on just building that foundation on the DoD and NASA contracting side, and we've done pretty well there. But that's really just a way to offset the what's, I think, generally a pretty big capital expenditure to develop these technologies. So we've been lucky where, like, we can point to all the work we've done and say more than half of that work was funded by non-dilutive capital from the government versus... Yeah.
The initial research and development can't be funded by government.
Right, exactly.
And I think government plays a super important role mm-hmm. in everything we do,
yeah.
from deep tech and even in space.
Yep.
But I think companies need to be able to stand on the commercial footing, and that's what you're looking to do with the fiber optic production. Yep. How much stuff can you bring back down? Is there an upper limit as to how much you can return to Earth?
I mean, it depends on the vehicle. So the first version of our vehicle we call Ferial. It's a 1/5 scale.
I see a pattern.
Yeah. I'm not that good at like names. Like
most space people aren't.
We did like Outpost because I'm like, we're going to build like the outposts in space. Turns out that's like a pretty common word in the space industry. In the beginning, a lot of people got confused by that name. They're like, they confuse us with like the 12 other outposts, something
yeah,
or
like
other.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, like you guys
get
know.
All the outposts. So I think it was like our second year of operations, we did an April Fool's where.
I love April Fool's.
Yeah.
What's the funniest April Fool's you've ever?
This one. Okay. The one I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
So it was so good that my marketing team said, we can't put this out from Outpost, we have to have you put it out, Jason. So on my like socials, I put this out. It was April 1st, and I said, look, everybody's been really confused with our name because it just is so similar to these other names in the space industry. So we decided to change our name to something that will never be confused with any other brand. It's super unique. It's says exactly what we do. And then the day before April 1st, we took a team photo, and the team didn't know about this. I just said, like, we're taking a team photo, and we, in very bad Photoshop, made them all be wearing white shirts with this new logo. and that was the picture I shared, was like the very happy team without them knowing that we were like Photoshopping
them. Oh,
the
team didn't know. My team, yeah. And the team was, you changed.
Wearing the logo. And the logo is the In-N-Out hamburger company. Perfect. It's their logo, but it says up and down instead of in and out. Like, we go up and down. And then we rebuilt a website, up-and-down.com.
And you reforwarded it.
And it looked like the In-N-Out menu, which is a very simple menu. It's like you get a burger or a cheeseburger, fries kind of thing. And we rebuilt it. So it's an actual booking page where you can book a launch with us. And it's like you can get an up, you can get a down, you can get both.
What about animal style?
There was like a secret menu. And the secret menu was like,
I'm going to have to work with you on your next April Fool's thing.
It was awesome. I sent it to our investors. I said, guys, like, we had to change the name today. And they thought this was real.
Are they like, investing again?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. They got the t-shirt. So I'm not good at names. That's all I'm trying to say. But Ferial.
Do you have kids?
Their names are good, but we were so bad at naming them that we had to leave the hospital without them having names because we're like, this is a big decision. Like, they're going to have to live with this name.
You know, the Wildlings in Game of Thrones didn't name their children until 2 years because was it the Wildlings or was it like somebody in medieval? I think it was medieval history because like infant mortality was so high. So they didn't name them until they're 2 years old.
I've heard that. Yeah.
Growing up, I had a very unique name growing up in Florida and they would call me Tarek Naked Waked. And I hated it. And then they called me the Dinosaur Hunter. But then on Google, like when you search me, easy like there's like two people. It's always annoying because we always fight over the Gmails or the handles. I think he's related to me somehow long term. But I like the idea of a unique name or an uncommon name because, you know, it's unique.
I remember in like 2000, when I started using Twitter, like 2009.
Same.
I was like, I was really pissed off that I couldn't get the at Jason.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, look,
you know,
this
you
guy
can pay
up.
Like $1 million or something
think this
for
guy.
Like,
I'm like, who's this at Jason guy? Why is he, how do you get
was
it?
Was he the founder?
No, it's Jason Calacanis. Uh-huh. So I'm like, now,
Jason,
now everybody
we'll buy
knows
your. Actually, I'll take that back. He probably wants way too much money.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to have a name that like you have that you can get your.
Yeah, well, when I go to Starbucks, I have to say T because right. Then if they want me to spell it, then I have to say 5 letters instead of one.
Yeah.
But did you ever have nicknames growing up?
No, I mean, there's a couple family members who call me JJ, which nice. Is good, but or Jace.
Yeah, we call Abdo's son Jay. His name's
yeah.
John.
Yeah. Not bad.
So what do you think? Do you think you ever want to go to space personally?
I'm like, I do, but not the way like most people in this industry do. I want to go to space when it's as safe as taking an international flight. And no, when we sold Made in Space, the other three founders were like, all right, let's all like book a Blue Origin flight. And
I think
like,
SpaceX's success rate is 99%.
It's pretty good, right?
It's really good. So at what point, like what is the indicator that will tell you that it's as safe?
Well, now, like I'll tell you, now that I have a family and 2 kids, the thinking has changed where I don't want to put my own life at risk.
Of course.
Against the family. So the way I think of it is like, I'm interested in a Starship cruise around the moon, you know, like mm-hmm. 5 days, Starship goes out, swings around, comes home, and me and my family all go, we get a nice little suite in Starship and like, that'd be fun.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the meme of like the guys in the bus and then they're like playing cards or something and then it's like showing Starship doing the landing and then they're like flipping around? Can we try to like pull that up? It's hilarious. I always think about that. It's like, okay, the ascent has got to be really difficult to get up even after they continue to develop. I'd love to see what they do there. And then coming down on a Starship
it's a little gnarly.
Where you're like doing the belly flop and then the flip.
Right.
You got to. It's going to give you nauseous.
Harness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever done zero G?
No, I haven't. Have
it's
you?
It's crazy. Yeah. What Made in Space, that was like how it all got started was NASA gave us a contract to do zero G flights.
Okay.
And it was like no money, just flights. And we literally just bootstrapped the whole thing. But we spent a summer, it was the summer of 2011, in Houston. Every 3 weeks, we'd go back for a week. And we did so many flights that by the end of the summer, I had spent 2 hours waitless. And you get 20-second increments. Wow. So if you had to add up 20 seconds across that many.
Did you get taller? Do you think you get taller if you're in space long enough? Because like
you should look that up. But like something weird things happen. Your eyes get bad.
Really?
Do you know that? Like the astronauts, they all started having bad vision after being on the space station, but none of them would say anything because
they
all want
to keep going.
Fly again, right? So somehow it came out and NASA now has this instrument that's on the space station that every so often you have to like hold your eyeballs and it like checks your eyes for you.
Oh, wow.
So like the cat's out of the bag.
Cat's out
but
of
if
the bag.
But if your eyes get bad, like maybe you get taller.
Do you think that babies can be born in space? Because we haven't ever tested that.
We should try.
I want to try.
Yeah?
For sure.
You sign up for that?
I'll be the guinea pig.
I don't... You can do that? You can have babies? You'll be on the other side of it. Yeah. Yeah. Fish. I think it was during the space shuttle, there were some fish that were bred in space.
Oh, okay. So we do have some data from animals.
Like not mammals. I think mice. NASA Ames had a mission called Rodent Habitat. They use the word habitat because it like sounded better, but I think they were doing a lot of like euthanasia of rats on the space station.
Really?
Yeah. It was when we did the 3D printer work. So
I heard Corinne talking earlier. She was like saying how apparently Gen Z, the youth, right? The euthanasia. Uh-huh. That's why I'm thinking of this.
Oh my God.
There's this like new type of, they call guys a rat boy.
What?
Yeah. Apparently like there's like this whole new like term for men that look like rats, and that's like attractive to Gen Z.
What?
Yeah, rat boys like Timothy Chalamet, and
he's a rat boy.
Oh. I wonder what I would be. I'd be like a hairy animal or something.
Do people want to be rat boys?
Apparently.
Oh, interesting.
My EA like is into rat boys.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I
She's
feel like
this
is like an
outside,
AI
right?
thing. Like
yeah.
You could like AI yourself into be a rat boy.
You talked about how you look at things in the future, like when you started Made in Space.
Right.
I kind of look at investing in the same way. It's like, what needs to exist?
Yeah.
And let's try to figure out ways to invest in the infrastructure mm-hmm. required to get those things to exist.
Yeah.
And if we are going to be on the moon, if we're going to be on Mars, like we've invested in lunar companies like mm-hmm. Argo Space and Lunar Outpost, because we think all of that is like the first step to lay the foundation.
Right.
But I've been recently, I read Robert Zubrin's book, What We Are Going to Build on Mars, mm-hmm. The Case for Space, The Case for Mars.
Nice.
Maybe we pull up those books. Like, when do you start a company focused on Mars? Not when you are already launching to Mars, right. Before. And so what do you think that timeline is? What do you think the first things, if you've ever given any thought, yeah. that will be built on Earth for Mars? Or what's the economic case that closes?
Yeah. I'll be honest, I spend a lot less time thinking about Mars than I have like Earth orbit and, okay. and the cis lunar space. The high frontier basically sold me on building outside of the gravity well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole book was written on a question. O'Neill asked his physics class at Princeton, which was, is a planetary surface the right place for an expanding technological civilization?
Okay.
And the kind of the answer was no, you can build these like kind of like cities in space mm-hmm. outside of gravity wells. And then the High Frontier book was written around that.
Imagine the sports you could do. Like
it's amazing.
Sports in zero gravity, like that'll be a thing when it's cheap enough.
There's this thing I hear Elon say a lot, which I really agree with, which is there's so much like negative news that we see in the world that it's hard to remember that there's a lot of good things happening. And obviously, like, you know, we're hardwired to look for bad news. Like our amygdala is like from prehistoric times is like, is that a lion in the bushes or the wind blowing? And you're looking for bad news to stay alive.
You know, there used to be lions in Europe and we killed them all.
Yeah. Yeah, for that reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're hardwired to look for bad news, which makes it harder for us to notice all the good stuff, right? Like everything's far better today than it ever was.
And I think it's also because we have more access to information. The world is a much better place today than it was 50 years ago and 100 years ago.
But that also makes us notice more bad news.
And bad news sells.
Yep. So the reason, like, space in general, I think, is all, like, it's so exciting that it can make you believe that we're really close to an amazing future ahead. The free space kind of colonies that O'Neill designed are my favorite because they're just so different, but also completely achievable. Like, the level of, like, technology needed to do that versus colonize Mars is equal or maybe easier to do this because the distance is so close. But like, I mean, you mentioned like all the sports you could do. If you build these, like, they're basically cylinders and they rotate to mm-hmm. create gravity,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which means like the center line of that cylinder has zero gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're standing on the ground inside this cylinder and you look up, you know, a mile away, you'll see another ground because the whole inside surface is
kind of like that movie with All Right, All Right, All Right guy.
Well, the movie's called Interstellar.
Interstellar, right? When he's like playing baseball and then the baseball goes to the guy's roof.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that, like, to me, what I love about that is both are equally achievable, but that one is like so exciting. Like, while we're alive, we could build that. And wouldn't it be neat to go like launch on a starship and then, you know, a day later, you know, off the moon Lagrange point or whatever, you're in one of these things.
That'd be really cool.
Have your summer house. You can make one that's like the weather conditions of, you know, Florida.
Nobody wants that.
And it's nobody goes there except for our parents. You got like, you could have like Fiji year round. You could have some humpbacks, Cook Island style. You could have the best ski. You could have the Alps version.
So what is needed to unlock that? It's not just low cost launch.
Well, everything made in space was built for. You need to make these things in space, right? You're not going to launch a 5 kilometer long.
It has space to be colony. The cost, the economies, like the unit economics has to be as cheap as building it on Earth. Otherwise, people would just choose to go to Fiji, right?
That's true. Unless you might be able to convince some nation states to like start building them. Like,
but for it to massively get adopted, for space to massively get adopted, you have to bring down the cost of launch and then the underlying infrastructure down even further.
So you get launch costs down, then you go to the moon and get the resources. You launch them off the moon using like a rail gun. Mm-hmm. Very easy to build on the moon.
People are building
resources, right? You don't have the atmosphere. It's easy to launch off the moon. You get those materials out to these.
It's cheaper to bring water from the lunar surface it's cheaper to low Earth orbit than it is to launch it from Earth to low Earth orbit.
Isn't that crazy?
It's insane.
I think we're going to, like, I think we'll see, this is a side point, I think we'll see a resurgence of GEO satellites. We've seen all these satellites move to LEO. I think we're going to see, we're going to realize GEO actually was really good for lots of things. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have on the moon a factory to make GEO satellites because it's easier to launch them from the moon into GEO than from Earth. And it'll just turn everything on its head. You'll have a satellite manufacturing facility on the moon one day. So I think like the moon is this next step. It's where we get the resources. Then you can get those resources into space, build these colonies. Those colonies become the perfect launch spots to get to Mars, mm-hmm. get to the asteroids.
Well, isn't the delta V required to get to the moon and get to Mars almost the same?
Moon, I guess like you still have escape velocity off of Earth, which is a...
But you got to refuel the Starship.
Yeah.
But to go to the moon, you have to refuel the Starship in the same way you have to refuel it to go to Mars. So why take a step in between? Have you heard of Mars Direct?
Yeah.
And so they argue in Mars Direct, we should just go directly to Mars. Like there's not that much resources on the moon that...
Yeah. But why, like, I'm all for Mars. I think we should go there. I think it's like, at the very least, we should like have a, you know, do the Apollo style, like flags and footprints. But why would Mars be the only place that we...
It won't be like, the only settle, place, right? But I think if you look at the... mining in the asteroid belt is only possible if you have
Mars.
You're a civilization on Mars, you can actually build, it has an atmosphere.
Yeah.
I think recently, like 3 days ago, there was discovered that there's a whole ocean of water underneath the surface of Mars, like 12 kilometers deep.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, maybe if we could pull it up. It's unverified to me, but I saw it on Twitter by a source that I think is valid. That NASA, through seismic like studies, they found like a whole ocean that would cover the surface of Mars in a kilometer deep of water. So there's like more resources on Mars.
Great.
And also gravity is a third instead of a sixth.
Right. That's true.
So I think it'll be parallel.
Yeah, it's not like either or though.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more like what I find really exciting is that selfishly, while I'm still alive, I get to see all of these things happen. Like I want to see people living on Mars, on the moon, building colonies in space. And
you wanted to be a marine biologist and you think that there's a lot of value to make Earth better that we can, because that's the big argument against space. It's like, we have so many problems on Earth. Why are we spending money on space? But people don't realize half of a percent of GDP goes to NASA, but 18% or more goes to entitlements or goes to the military.
Right.
But there's more value extracted from NASA than there is from any of these other government spending programs.
Yeah.
So what do you think is like in the short term, medium term, and long term benefits we'll see on Earth from space?
Well, if we first like assume that Earth needs a lot of help, right? Like we need to save the planet. By like when we go to space doesn't want us to stay alive. Like we have to do a lot of work to stay alive when we're in space, right? We have to bring a little bubble of Earth with us everywhere we go. Mm-hmm. Like our spacesuits, our space capsules, our Eclipse. Space stations, those are little bubbles of Earth. And we have to invent all these machines that maintain the Earth environment wherever we go. And, you know, here on Earth, we just get it for free. It's here. But we have to build those technologies everywhere. If we go to Mars, we have to like eventually terraform Mars, like turn it into another Earth.
That'd be so cool.
Right. So first off, just by going to space, all we're doing is focusing on how to create systems that keep us alive.
And those systems can be used on Earth.
Back to Earth. The second is like it allows us to study the planet from this vantage point. It allows us to go to places that maybe used to have Earth-like conditions and figure out why they don't anymore. Probably the best reason to go to Mars is to figure out what happened, and so we don't let it happen here. So,
do you think there's aliens out there?
I think like aliens definitely exist. I don't know if they're in our solar system.
What if they're with us right now?
What if you're one of them?
Maybe. I wasn't an alien because I wasn't born in America.
Okay, there you go.
But extraterrestrials, I think, you know, the odds, they talk about the odds being the Drake equation, right? Where there's so much time and we're a blip in it. So yeah, maybe there has been life, but maybe there's the great filter that nobody can get past. So it kind of feels like we're living in that moment of the great filter.
It might be. I mean, I was thinking the other day that like maybe what happens is every civilization builds AI. The AI, for it to continue growing, needs more and more power. This is what we're seeing right now.
Goes to get the sun.
Well, right now, what we're just like trying to like build these data centers that use up huge amounts of gigawatts and gigawatts of power to run the AI. Eventually, the AI is like, I need more power. I'm going to do it at the consequence of wiping out all life on Earth because I'm going to raise the planet's temperature and all that stuff to generate more emissions and whatever. Yeah. It is. So maybe that's the great filter.
Or create like a Dyson sphere around the sun. That would be type two civilization. We're type one ventures.
That's why I like you guys.
We'll change. If we're still alive 100 years from now when we've reached type one status, we will change our name to type two ventures. But by then, will capitalism even exist?
All the type two civilizations are the one that exist right now are the ones that had made in spaces that continue to be successful.
So I should invest in Outpost.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we'll be leading your next round.
All right.
I talked to Daniel. We'll be co-leading or leading. We're really excited to get involved.
Oh, yeah. Awesome, man.
And so when it comes to, I want to bring one thing up we were talking about. Have you ever heard of like the great void, the great voids in space where there's like, it's just darkness?
Yeah, yeah. Like, what is it?
Yeah, like, what is it? Is it, like, just civilizations that have, like, had this, like, rampant AI that has taken over all the energy in the sun?
Yeah, like the Dyson sphere is
blocking out. Because there's this, like, huge swaths of space, like, massive swaths of space that have nothing.
Right.
It's insane. But, Jason, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast today. We're going to do a little bit of a quick fire. What's your favorite movie?
I have three.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, Groundhog Day.
Okay.
Life Aquatic. And then the third one like fluctuates, but right now it's Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind.
Never watched any of those.
What?
Yeah,
never. The first two you got like everybody's seen. But.
Mine is What Dreams May Come. Well, it's one of them. What Dreams May Come by Robin Williams. That's a good one. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah.
It's incredible. And it's super interesting to me because he goes to hell in the movie to save his wife who had committed suicide, to get her out of hell and bring her up to heaven. And in real life, after filming the movie 20 years later, he also committed suicide. So to me, it's like, holy, anyway, but thank you for being on the podcast today. Really appreciate it. And we look forward to working with you at Type One.